Namaste and welcome to another episode of the Bharat Varta Weekly. I'm Roshan Karyappa and I have with me Abhishek Paul to run you through the news and events of the week that was. It's been a rather busy week. We'll bring you updates on the Canada-India diplomatic crisis. Last week, we saw bribery allegations against TMC MP Mahua Moitra. The Supreme Court's final verdict on legality of same-sex marriage, US sanctioning three Chinese firms for supplying missile parts to Pakistan, ISRO's successful test of a crew landing module, and of course, we'll bring you updates from the ongoing Cricket World Cup as well. Hey Abhishek, how's it going?
Hey Roshan, all good. How are you?
Yeah, enjoying the Dasara celebrations. Really looking forward to visiting some pandals today. All right, let's go ahead with the news. Last week, Canada shut down their embassies in Bangalore, Mumbai and Chandigarh after removing 41 diplomats from the country after India sought diplomatic parity. Justin Trudeau attempted to slam India in yet another press conference and claimed that India's actions violated international laws. The Indian External Affairs Ministry swiftly responded, saying, "We reject any attempt to portray the implementation of parity as a violation of international norms. The state of our bilateral relations, the much higher number of Canadian diplomats in India and their continued interference in our internal matters warrant a parity in mutual diplomatic presence in New Delhi and Ottawa," it added. Is it just parity or perhaps, I mean, with all of this ensuing Israel-Palestine conflict and perhaps attention being diverted away, we saw it fit to, send these 41 folks back. What do you think, Abhishek?
Yeah, I mean, prima facie, Canada would say that a lot of Indians do want to, you know, either visit Canada as tourists or migrate for longer term, due to which they were having a much larger contingent of diplomats in India, for providing whatever visa services and so on, right, for these people. But I think India does suspect that Canada does try to influence politics in India, especially Punjab, right, given the kind of diaspora presence and influence that it has on the ruling dispensation. So I guess there is obviously a lot of mutual distrust from both sides right now. And yeah, I don't think India was taking advantage of the other situations. I just think this is what India strongly feels about, right? Like, you don't need 100 plus strength of Canadian diplomats in India. And also, I think the bigger issue is the lack of safety and security of Indian diplomats in Canada, right? Where they are being sort of mobbed by Sikh activists or Khalistani activists. And, you know, in general, their safety and security does not seem to be given the proper sort of concern by the Canadian government. So I think this is one way in which India thought of sort of registering its displeasure at the whole situation. In terms of reactions from other countries, both the US and UK have backed Canada, right, saying that they do not agree with India's actions and India should reconsider, etc. But I don't think India is in any mood to sort of relent on this, given how Canada and Justin Trudeau have chosen to escalate this whole incident around the killing of a so-called plumber. Right?
Yeah, diplomacy, international relations are definitely not a schoolyard fight. Obviously, this is not stuff like that, right? And there is greater interdependence for sure, no matter which country you talk about. We have a lot of expats in Canada. And don't forget that, you know, before all of this, we were even talking about an FTA with Canada, right? So I'm sure there must be good reason for what India has done, right? And I did see that press conference with Trudeau and, you know, he just fumbled all over it and saying that this is a violation of international law. I don't think they really have too much of a strong case in that sense, right? So, all right. Moving on, over the past week, allegations involving TMC party's MP Mahua Moitra took a serious turn when Darshan Hiranandani, CEO of the Hiranandani Group, turned an approver. In his affidavit to the Ethics Committee of Lok Sabha, he claimed that she provided him her parliament login and password so that he could post the questions directly on her behalf when required. He also claimed that the MP often threatened him in order to receive bribes in the form of luxury apparel and accessories. Mahua Moitra took to X and vehemently denied the charges, calling the letter a joke and said the draft of this letter was sent by the PMO and he was forced to sign it. Well, this is an interesting saga, right? And a few points that Ms. Moitra makes is that, you know, this letter was signed on a blank piece of paper and not any kind of letterhead, right? And also that a lot of the language and so on seems to indicate a support for the Prime Minister, which may not be the case in actual and so on, right? So, interesting saga for sure. Henry the dog has turned out to be, you know, quite the anti-corruption campaigner, Abhishek.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those cases where there is probably not much substance or importance in the whole affair, but it's kind of become a source of, you know, amusement on social media, right? Where people are just happy to, you know, troll the other side and, you know, have a few good laughs. So, yeah, I mean, the whole case will now go to the Parliamentary Ethics Committee, and you know, there they have to decide on the facts of the matter, right, as to whether you know, some consideration like gifts or cash, etc., whatever was exchanged or not between Mahua Moitra and Mr. Hiranandani and so on, right? So it's more of a ethics committee question, right? Because ultimately, I think, for example, Mahua Moitra can say that in some ways, whatever, like, let's say if her questions were, you know, in the public interest or whatever, right? So she had the right to ask those questions. Now, so I don't know, like, whether it becomes a criminal case or not. I think it's more of a ethics breach potentially, which could lead to a disqualification or some sort of other censure from the Speaker of the House and so on. So I'm not sure in terms of what the penal provisions are, but yeah, it's probably more of an ethics related case right now. And of course, it's also a public perception related case. It also could be a question of her survival in politics, in her party and so on. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that.
You know, someone brought up this case of parliamentary immunity or something of that sort. Do you think that applies in this case, or she isn't immune from
it? Yeah, I don't think it applies in the sense if the allegations of, you know, basically cash for questions is proven, then it's kind of, it shows that, you know, you are... I don't know if you can call it corruption, but it certainly seems like something unethical, right? So, yeah, it's probably to do with code of conduct of parliamentarians rather than anything related to, you know, whether she has immunity or not.
Yeah, and just to back up and give you a little more context on this, Jay Anant, who is a Supreme Court lawyer, apparently, and a former paramour of Mahua Moitra, came up with these allegations suggesting that, you know, Mr. Hiranandani had bribed Ms. Moitra for asking and provoking certain allegations and questions in the floor of the House against the Adani group, right? And at the heart of all of this was a custody battle for a Rottweiler called Henry, right, whom, you know, Anand says that Ms. Moitra has kidnapped, right? And his being a concerned dog parent, I mean, he is trying to get the poor dog back, right? And so there are plenty of memes on Twitter,
John Wick,
right, comparing Henry's, yeah, you know, John Wick jokes and comparing Henry's past and present lives and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, Indian politics, man, I tell you, never short of interesting things for sure, right? Last Wednesday, 18th October, the Supreme Court gave its final verdict on the same-sex marriage after months of debate. The Supreme Court, in its verdict, showed some sense of sanity when it declared that the laws around marriages should be regulated by the legislative, which is the government, and the judiciary, which is the court, has no legal power to implement a law that has not been formed. The apex court, however, recognized the rights of same-sex couples and accepted the government's offer to set up a panel to consider granting more legal rights and benefits to the LGBTQ plus community. I think the principle is something that we can agree to, right? Which is that the legislative has to make these kind of laws and not necessarily the judiciary. I think this is the principle that a lot of folks, including Jay Sai Deepak, argued for, right? That courts cannot arbitrarily make these laws based on, you know, whatever whims, right? So what do you think, Abhishek? In my opinion, I think it's a sane judgment.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, this impression has been building over the years about India's Supreme Court, right? That they quite often overstep their boundaries and get into legislative work rather than simply deciding on constitutional questions, right? And so this judgment seems to be a sort of welcome step back by the Supreme Court, where it recognized its own limitations, right? That lawmaking is the domain of the legislature and the parliament rather than the Supreme Court, right? And so it cannot really give a judgment on something for which there is no law yet, right? So just to sort of summarize the verdict, there were basically like there's a majority opinion of three judges and then there is a minority opinion. I think both the majority and minority opinions agreed that there is no right to marriage as of now. The majority opinion said that there is no right to civil union as well, but it can be done through laws, while the minority opinion, which had the CGI, said that, you know, they have a right to civil union. Similarly, the majority opinion held that there was no right to adopt children, while the minority opinion was giving them a right to adopt children. Right? So these are some of the key sort of points. Obviously, there were many other details, but effectively now it's going to be the committee formed by the central government to look at these issues in detail. I don't think there is any time-bound obligation on them to come up with anything anytime soon. So it's probably going to take a few years where these issues are sort of discussed and studied in details, and then the committee can come up with some recommendation.
Yeah. No, I think, the parliament is a representation of the people, and the judiciary is concerned with the constitution, right? I mean, this is a very simplistic explanation. So we had Sarthak and Shubhendu, both of them very esteemed lawyers, discuss all of this on a fascinating episode of Bharat Varta some time back. We'll definitely link to that on the description. You guys should definitely check it out. But I think the broader principle and spirit has been respected, which is fair by all of us, I would say, right? All right. The US has imposed sanctions on three China-based companies for supplying missile-applicable items for Pakistan's ballistic missile program. The US State Department said on Friday that the sanctions were being imposed as part of the global non-proliferation regime. They were also sanctioned for having engaged or attempted to engage in activities or transactions that have materially contributed to the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction or their means of delivery, including missiles capable of delivering such weapons. The firms identified were General Technology Limited, Beijing Luo Luo Technology Development Company Limited, and Zhangzhou UTech Composite Company Limited. Abhishek, this is something that perhaps the US would have ignored or turned a blind eye maybe a few years back even, right? But it's something that has come to focus now. Does it, signify growing interest in the region and also our proximity with the US?
I think it probably signifies that the US is now beginning to treat China as a serious adversary and doing its best to sort of limit the influence that China can have in the Asia-Pacific or Indo-Pacific region, right? So I would say, I would look at it in that way, right? That obviously it's a very concerning thing if Chinese firms are sort of seen as, you know, proliferating missile technology related to ballistic missiles and stuff, right? And especially with Pakistan being such a such an unstable state, right? So there's always a chance of this not only going to the Pakistani government, but even their non-state actors, right? So yeah, I would say it's more
right.
of a...
Which are significant in Pakistan,
concern
right?
Concern around China and even Pakistan.
And in some optimistic news, the Indian Space Research Organization, or ISRO, successfully conducted a test involving an in-flight abort demonstration and recovery of a crew module. The mission, known as the Gaganyaan Test Vehicle, or TVD-1, lasted 8.8 minutes and is part of the Gaganyaan human spaceflight mission planned for 2025. The crew module performed various maneuvers, deployed parachutes, and landed in the Bay of Bengal. The objectives of the mission include evaluating test vehicle subsystems and the crew escape system. You know, ISRO's activities have come into sharp focus, over the last few years. And it's been phenomenal to see the rise of India as a space, power. I personally feel that over the next 5-10 years, we will be leaders in industrial space commercialization and whatnot, right? I mean, for sure. I mean, if you look at all the startup activity, just last week, in fact, Agnikul, which is a space startup, raised about $29 million. There's a lot of activity happening here. And India is being very ambitious on the space front, right? I mean, we're looking to land humans on the moon by 2040. And in fact, you know, much earlier, have a separate space station itself by 2035. I think it's a variety of factors. It's the fact that we have talent. It's the fact that, you know, we have technology capabilities. And also, I think the geopolitics as well, right? Something that, you know, you can't ignore. We're sufficiently insulated from a lot of the US, China, Russia polarities to be lucrative for, industries and countries even to sort of consider us for their space flights and missions and whatnot, right? So, yeah, definitely interesting stuff, and we'll bring you more updates on this front. And finally, some updates on the Cricket World Cup front. South Africa and Australia sit at the third and fourth position after 2 wins each. India and New Zealand will be playing tomorrow, which is 22nd October. Abhishek, did you catch the Pakistan-Australia match? I mean, extremely high scoring.
Yeah, I did catch some parts of it. So yeah, I think good to see that Bangalore got a good game. And I think the crowd enjoyed themselves. It was a fairly high scoring game, as you can expect. I think the Aussies hit 19 sixes, which is phenomenal, right? So I think the crowd would have got their money's worth. But yeah, I think the World Cup is in an interesting situation. What I was thinking is, like, there are like 6 pretty good teams in the World Cup, right? And only 4 can make it to the semifinals. So from a tournament standpoint, I think it's in a very interesting phase. For example, England and South Africa are playing today. And so that is going to be a very crucial game as to, you know, if the winner will probably be in a better position to sort of clinch a semi-final spot. India-New Zealand tomorrow will again be a very interesting match. India hasn't defeated New Zealand in a ICC event since 2003, right? So it's like a 20-year sort of drought for India. So hopefully we win tomorrow and end that streak. But yeah, I think India is doing pretty well. The tournament is in a sort of interesting spot. I think we saw 2 big upsets last week, right? Afghanistan beating England and South Africa losing to the Netherlands, right? So that provided a bit of, much needed twist to the tournament. But what we've not had so far is a great match as such, you know, which goes down to the last over and things like that. So that's one thing which is still yet to happen in the tournament. But otherwise, I think it's picked up quite nicely.
Yeah, we should perhaps do a cricket episode with Mahek and the other guys, just before the finals. Yeah. Certainly a lot to discuss, for sure, right? Including some of the organizational elements that, we discussed, right? So that's it from us on this week of the Bharat Vartha Weekly. If this is your first time here, don't forget to follow and subscribe to us for all of this content on politics, policy and culture. We have plenty of interesting episodes coming up next week as well. So with that, Abhishek and I will say goodbye. Do stay safe, take care, and Jai Hind.